that's when I really started understanding the value of what the user voice does for the community. And that argument is kind of like hard for people to like say no to.
Hi, Adam.
Hi, Audrey.
Hi, Sydney.
Hi, Audrey. Hi.
Hi, Sydney.
We're excited to have you here today, Sydney. Tell us who you are and why you're here.
I'm Sydney Watkins. I am a CET user. I've used the program for over 10 years. I've been fortunate enough to teach at the CET conference. I've lost track of how many times, but I've also been lucky enough to be on some of the boards to help further the initiatives of CET. So I'm part of the Extension Alignment Board, which has been really eye-opening. I'm part of the Radical Sprint team with Configura, and I've been able to sit on the chat with the users at the conference multiple times, which is actually one of my favorite things because I love talking to the developers. So found that they're kind of my people. So yeah.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit more on like what the advisory boards are and what the Radical Sprint, what that means.
So the Extension Alignment Board, which I think started last year. So that has representatives from all the major extensions, like your Hayworths, your Herman Millers. So there's a representative from each that runs the extension. And then there's some users, there's some other, you know, community leaders. So we kind of get the perspective from a little bit of everyone. I could go into a lot of detail about it, but it's been the most eye-opening experience. The things that I complained about for years, being like, why can't we just do this? It's so common sense. And then I sat down in my first meeting, I was like, oh, this is way more complicated than I ever imagined it would be. But it's amazing. And then with the Radical Sprint team, that's a bunch of configurants, a few end users where they, go on and show us little tidbits of new features that everyone's been working on, get feedback from everyone in the group. Sometimes it's really in-depth feedback. We also had a conversation where we talked about the color of a square forever. Which was actually hilarious. It was absolutely hilarious. It's really nice to be able to be a part. Like, it's nice that users are being included on that stuff because a lot of the time things just get rolled out and that's like our opportunity to like sort of beta those types of things, being like, this is how we want this tool to use. And it also, I think, helps inform the Configura team of how we're actually going to use it. So that'll change, some of the direction. So it's been really helpful to be included in those things. And even the fact that any user is allowed to be on there, that's a relatively new thing, which is very helpful. And it makes me happy that we're being heard.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Configura has been over the years getting better and better about incorporating user feedback along the way.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was interesting about the user feedback is when you think about it, the company was built on user feedback to start with, because like the entire ecosystem was basically this guy helping his dad design his panels a little bit better, essentially using computers. And then over the years, like, I think we kind of lost sight of that a little bit. And now it's like we're getting back to it, which I think is awesome.
Yes.
Kind of going back to our roots, what made us successful in the first place.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it gets harder when the user base goes from 1 to 15,000, 20,000. 20, whoa, 20 million? When did we get 20 million users?
Yesterday.
Oh, huge increase. Okay, that's actually suspicious. But no, yeah, when your user base grows that much, it's harder to kind of find the ways to incorporate their voices, but we've improved in finding those ways, which is really exciting. As a user experience researcher, I'm always trying to incorporate the voice of our users. So I'm excited that you're on those, on those teams too.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's a lot of fun.
And for our listeners at home, all of the teams at Configura have names related to something mathematical, which when they announced this, they actually had people like make suggestions for what kind of theme they should go with. And I suggested candy. I'm still very bitter we didn't go with candy, but
As a math person, I'm actually quite excited that the math one won, to be honest.
Yeah,
I
think it's candy, really cool. Sweden eats the most candy per person of any country in the whole world. So I felt really important,
really,
like, really relevant and cultural.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do actually.
That's crazy.
It's like one of their
nuts.
Their number, their other big import actually. Well, no, sorry, they don't import the candy, but their biggest import is also taco seasoning. They import more taco seasoning than any other country in the world.
Good for
them. They don't use it. They don't do seasoning.
Yeah, they use it on Fridays, right? Because they have Taco Fridays. It's like a family tradition over there.
Yeah.
Every Friday, people have tacos. It's
That's
crazy.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, yeah, I don't, Adam. Maybe you can actually explain what radical means in the mathematical world, because I actually have no idea.
Oh, it's not very exciting at all. When you actually are taking like a root of something, that little symbol that you use to describe it, like that weird like check mark looking deal.
Yeah,
that's called a radical.
Interesting.
Oh.
Yep. It's not as exciting as it should be. It's just like that symbol that represents like this is a cube root or a square root or whatever.
Yeah. Okay. I should have known that actually. Or what I mean by that is that I'm sure I did know that at one point.
I'm sure you did. Everybody probably did. Yeah.
But really filtered it out. Okay. So where were we going with that? We were just talking about kind of like why you're here and how you have participated in,
I have a question actually that related sort of to that. Sydney, like how was your background getting to be like where you are? Like, how did you go from like getting out of high school to here? Like, what's the journey been like?
That's a good question. I went to college without having any idea what I wanted to do, took a bunch of gen ed classes, took ballroom dancing, pretty sure I paid for a rock climbing Ooh. Class, like for credits. and my mom had always painted houses, like interior of houses, and she worked with an interior designer, and she's like, just do a job shadow just for one day. And I'm like, okay, fine. And I did it for one day. All I did was order fabric, and I applied to college at art school here in Grand Rapids the next day. I was like, that's it. That's for me. And it was all residential. And I was like, oh, I want to be like my mom and own my own business and like meet people, go in their houses. Then I went through college. I actually did learn CET in college. So I did two projects in CET and I hated it. I hated it. It was the worst like section ever. It's because nobody told me how to turn off my snaps. So every time I would attach something, everything would rotate.
Wow.
So I graduated, got a job at Ethan Allen selling residential furniture. Mm. I cried every day on my way to work. It was off.
Oh, no.
It's all sales-based, so you can't collaborate with anyone. Like, it was actually frowned upon that I was collaborating. And so I applied to every interior design job within a 100-mile radius. I didn't care. I was going to get out of there. And I got lucky enough to be picked up by a local Hayworth dealer in Lansing and realized that this is my calling. Furniture is my calling. And I've never looked back. It's amazing. I love it. Yep.
That's awesome. And then you had to face CET again. Well, how was that refacing it? Where you're like, oh no, my old nemesis.
Yeah. Well, at my old dealership, they didn't do any training. They didn't teach anybody. You had to do CAD first. And then if you did your dues, which are usually 2 to 3 years, then you would maybe get a CET license. Well, I bullied my way into it and was like, I just started teaching myself because nobody was really training on anything. I was like, well, I can learn this program. It's not that much different than SketchUp. Somebody taught me how to turn my snaps off so I wasn't angry anymore. And I got lucky because my manager was pregnant and about to go on maternity leave and nobody wanted to take her projects. And she had all of her projects in CET and I was like, I'll take them. And so I sat next to her. And then when she went on maternity leave, I just like kind of like swooped into that side where all I did was CET. And kind of just tried to always push the program to its max, figure out all the efficiencies, bullied my way into all of these boards that I'm on. Bullied my way into going to the conference every year, teaching. So it all kind of started slow, but just tried to be available for everything so that I could have those opportunities. Cause that's when I really started understanding the value of what the user voice does for the community. And that's always been my like arguing point whenever like leadership's like, oh, well, you know, it's going to cost to send you to this. And I was like, but I have an opportunity to help not only get our voices out there, but also help people that are programming and designing where the future of this this like software is going to go, like help guide them as well. So it's like that argument's kind of like hard for people to like say no to. If not just looking to better myself, it's like I want to help the whole community. So it's been an easier after I've gotten out all of these like different boards and stuff. They're like, okay, I guess you're the person now. I was like, sweet. No more negotiating.
No, that's awesome. I think just being able to see the long-term benefit that like, cause things take a long time. Mm-hmm. I actually, did a survey recently with our feedback community. Just another plug for the feedback community, you know, as I always have to say. But I was kind of trying to evaluate their experience of the community. What do they like? What do they dislike? What are their kind of expectations, et cetera? Just make sure that we're making it valuable for the people who participate. And one of the questions was, how long do you expect to see an impact from when you give feedback to when you see something in CET? And it was very interesting, like the range of answers. There were several who were like, it depends on like the size of the project, but there were also several who said like 1 month, a couple months, and a lot who said like the next release. And I was like, I feel kind of bad now because like software takes a long time. Like in some ways technology moves fast, but with something as complicated as this industry with CET, it can take a while. So, that was just an interesting thing. So, all that to say, I think having an understanding of that long term, like the end goal, the end goal is to make life better for everyone. We'll see how long it takes.
Well, and I can elaborate on that because that type of a question, if I had just started, I would expect 3 months tops, right? Mm-hmm. Now I know that it's probably going to be at least two releases out, probably two major releases out. And one of the perfect examples is when that first meeting that when I was on the extension alignment board where I had the, oh, aha, this isn't as easy as I think. As we were talking about categorizations, because that's like one of the biggest complaints that all users have is that why does each manufacturer have like 15 different like categorizations? None of them align with each other. And to us, it's like, it's simple. Okay. A chair is a chair. Power is power. Like, and then when I looked around the table at all the other extensions or major manufacturers that I don't have like access to their extensions, the way that they've programmed those categories have been in place for, you know, like 20 years coming from like CAD and stuff. And so it's not just everyone around the table saying, okay, this is a screen. Well, some manufacturers, that's a part of a structure. So it's not as easy. Like something that I thought was incredibly easy didn't take into account how many different extensions it has to go through. So like every feature request that we put through, especially if it's for core, it's not just like push it out there. It has to go through all the extensions and make sure this is not messing anything up, you know? And I think that from the user side that we don't see that.
Yeah.
I think that the history of things is actually kind of an interesting topic in general, because like one of the things that's always driven me crazy as a developer is it's like, how does a user order something? And like, that's never like, for some reason, I just believe it's like going to an Amazon cart and you push a button and like, you know, all the magic, you know, stuff comes out of that. And the 20 different ERP systems and every manufacturer has their own. And like, it's all like been this way for 50 years in some cases. And some of them are trying to change them, but it's a massive change for them. And it's like, man, I'd like it so all users can just hit a button and order this stuff. That would be beautiful. But then I have to get all 50 manufacturers, all 200 manufacturers to agree on what that's going to be. Mm-hmm. And like, I can't get 10 people to agree that ice cream is delicious. Mm-hmm. So how do I get that to happen?
Who is saying ice cream isn't delicious?
Not a fan.
I'll get on
that. Not a fan.
Sydney.
Not we a found fan. Her. We found you the better one.
Hope, you better hope I forget that fact by the time I see you at Experience.
I have sensitive teeth. I did actually eat ice cream. I did eat ice cream last night, but I had to let it melt all the way because it hurts my teeth.
Oh my goodness. All right.
Today we learned.
Fun fact.
I guess, so that's different than saying it's not delicious.
Yes, it's delicious. Right. I just don't like the ice part.
Okay. Okay. Then I will allow it. I will allow it. Okay. Whew, I can calm down now. I can continue talking to you. All right.
Apparently, we need to do an alert about ice cream with Audrey.
Yeah. It, like, just me talking about how great it is? Or
yeah.
I'm on it. Okay, so let's actually talk about what we wanted to talk about before.
Do you want to ask the questions from your questionnaire, Audrey?
I do want to ask the questions from my questionnaire. Thank you for reminding me, because I forget sometimes. So I feel like we already have gotten to know you a lot, which is great. But we have like a little rapid fire survey, just like questions, a little bit of this or that kind of thing, just to get to know you better. Let me make sure there's not a question on ice cream on here, because we already covered that. Okay, I think we're good. Are you ready?
Sure.
Okay. Pineapple on pizza, yes or no?
No.
Window seat or aisle seat?
Ooh. Window seat. Maybe. Okay. I don't know.
Maybe. Sounds like that's another discussion as well. Okay. Planner, digital or paper?
Nothing on paper. Everything is digital.
Okay. Movie or TV series?
TV series.
Awesome. Oh, wait, there's one more. If you could time travel for a day, past or future?
Oh, past. Past for sure. I love history, and give me a period piece and like an awesome dress, like all day.
Jane Austen, no.
Love it. Okay, perfect. Now we know you even better. And so we can finally get into our official planned topics. I mean, honestly, we probably could just keep going. It was a great conversation. Yeah. But Adam, kick us off on our our planned topics.
So basically, this one actually is more for the developers, I'd argue. But there's some other stuff I think that we're going to find interesting in here, too. As somebody who had no experience in the commercial interior industry, I actually came, my last job was in the automotive industry. So, like, I definitely had a bit of a culture shock coming in. There's about a billion terms that I've heard over the years that, like, I have no idea what that means. And embarrassingly, even to this day, because when I did develop for the period of time that I was working on an extension, it was an extension for conveyors. So, like, I still don't know what some of this stuff really means. So what the first one I had for you, Sydney, was like NICDQ and like the sort of like, I don't know how to call it, like the acronyms that come after someone's title or that kind of thing in the industry. What are those? And like, what are those
so
about?
So you almost had it. It's NCIDQ.
So close.
See, look at that.
It's okay. In fairness, I actually had to look up the definition, because I'm just used to seeing it after everybody's, The NCIDQ is National Council for Interior Design Qualifications. So it's not required in all states. Like, you'll find that a lot of, I can't say a lot of designers, but at least me, for being in Michigan, it's not required for me to call myself an interior designer. So, like, literally my husband, who's a scientist, he could put interior designer on a business card and pick out pillows for someone. So it's like the official certification. There's some, it's a controversial topic depending on what state you're in. Cause people like lobby for it to be law, and it's this whole thing. So it's basically a qualification saying that you took this really hard test. I would equate it to the version of like the bar for interior designers. Like, it's like three different chunks. I did not take mine because I had a baby right when I graduated, literally 2 months after I graduated. So, it just wasn't in the cards. And I find that a lot of the stuff on there, cause it's for design as a whole. So it doesn't, all of that doesn't 100% pertain to furniture, and I'll never do anything other than furniture.
Yeah.
But same, like there's like other associations like IADA, it's just classifications that you can get or groups that you're a part of that you contribute to within the community. So it's alphabet soup.
What does that exam entail? Is like, you mentioned it's kind of like the bar for interior design. Is it anywhere as difficult as that exam?
Never taken the bar, so can't compare. I did prep for the NCIDQ for like 2 years.
Yeah.
So there's a first portion where it's like a practical exam. At least this is how it was when I was in college. I know that they've moved to a digital format, but it used to be like literally hand drawn. So there's a practical, and then there's, oh my God, I can hear every interior designer screaming at me right now because I'm getting probably this wrong. But from what I remember, there's three different parts. There's a certain portion where you have to have it like, experience in the field to even take the other parts, but it's very rare that anybody passes it on the first time. A lot of people have to take it again. It is. I mean, the studying that I did for it is very intense. Like a question, like what type of artwork would you hang in a ward of a hospital that people have like dementia that are like losing their memory? Because there's certain images that can trigger that or make it worse or make it better. And I'm like, some of the time, all the questions, all the answers could be right, but one of them's the best answer. So it's not, when you see that after someone's name, that's like, the respect is deserved because they worked their butt off for it. And absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's not easy.
That sounds incredibly intense. Yeah.
So
I should know this, but I'm curious, is it something you have to like renew or like kind of not maybe do the whole thing, but kind of
you
keep up with?
You have to have so many like CEUs, continuing education units, each year, which luckily a lot of the manufacturers are really good about like setting those up because they know people have to get them. And then you do have to pay to keep your, like, you'll see some people that have NCIDQ and then they'll have like a bunch of numbers after it. That's their like personal identification number. There's also a lot of people out there that will like, and I'm just speaking from personal experience, that will get it and then keep that portion, and they like they'll do the CEUs, but they don't necessarily pay to keep up the subscription. So they took the exam, they know the information. Their certification just might not be like valid for that year or whatever, but doesn't mean that they don't know their stuff. So yeah,
awesome,
sweet. I was actually going to ask next about systems lines. This one's actually always driven me crazy. I hear the term all the time, and I hear that this is actually going to be kind of another one where there might be some interior designer listening to this screaming at you for getting it wrong. So I guess I'm putting all the pressure on you today, Sydney, but yeah.
That's fine. Yeah, I should have prefaced all of this with, I'm not the end-all decider. Like, this is my opinion of what I know, and anyone can tell me that I'm wrong, and I'll be like, you know what? Maybe, sure. If you have a different opinion, and you're not going to hurt my feelings.
Hey, as long as you know that, and like, that's all that matters. Like I don't know. That's just crazy when someone has an opinion and they're unwilling to let it go. And I'm like,
Maybe we can do a corrections episode where we let people email us at snapintoit@configure.com. And then
Sydney's an idiot who doesn't know what an NCIDQ is.
It actually stands for, I don't know, I can't think of anything fast enough, but I was trying to be funny.
I would be impressed.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah. It's too many letters to come up for.
And there's a Q in there too.
The Q, I think it would have to be quilters. Definitely. Like something, something, something quilters. Yeah.
I was going to go Queens.
There you go.
Oh, Queens. Oh, that would be good.
Yes, Queen.
Yes.
So back to the original question.
Okay.
Yes. Systems. So, and this actually did come up in the extension alignment board because when, Eric Hinkle, who like runs the board, which perfect person to run the board because everyone just kind of yells their opinions at him, and he just like takes it in stride, writes it down. Like, it's awesome. It's very funny. But he had a different, like when they put the categorizations up, like he had like random things under systems, and there's like four or five people that are like, how could that be a system? So in my mind, what a system is anything that has internally routed power that distributes power to different locations with a caveat. So think of panel-based systems, powered benching or like height adjustable benching that's together, fixed benching that has power down the spine, beam systems. So anything that's a power distribution is how I see it. Usually has a hardwired base feed. The only thing that I would say is different than that is when it comes to conference tables, where if you have daisy change power, which could be plugged in or hardwire, I don't consider that a system. I would consider that tables ancillary. And to the next type of topic is anything that's not a system is ancillary. So ancillary is like the parent, everything else is the child. So.
Got it. Okay. Yeah.
Perfect. I'm curious with, you said there was some confusion at the, on the board. What were some other, were there like opinions or thoughts that were different from yours or?
Oh, I think it was just us disagreeing
within the designers.
Yeah. No, I think we, I think cause there was two different categories. There was system and then there was like spine based, and the discussion ended up being that anything that's spine based, like a panel or a beam, that just goes under systems. So it was more like consolidating. And I think Eric did have like conference tables or training tables under there, and we pulled that out. So we, at the end, we all like all the designers agreed. So that was actually our one win was that.
Nice.
That was like the one that we all agreed on.
I don't know if you knew this, Sydney, but actually, just for a fun fact for everybody, Eric Inkel was my boss when I started. So
look at that.
I actually worked directly for him.
Awesome.
Look at that. Yeah.
I've always heard great things from people who have had him as a boss, actually.
Oh, he's a really good manager, 100%. Like, can vouch. He's an excellent, excellent manager, I think. So
maybe we'll try to get him on one day.
Yeah, you should. If it's anything how he handles everybody complaining about everything, takes in stride. So.
Yeah, absolutely. He's extremely empathetic too. Like he gets fired up about our users and, you know, their pain points. And, he's gone on a lot of the dealership visits along with me and along with others. And he's a great person to have there to listen. And he's got a good grip on, both the developers and the users, in general. So yeah. Anyways, a little plug for him, I guess. Oh, but I was going to just say too, so with the kind of agreed upon, definition, would you just say it was a little bit more general of like things that connect to other?
Anything. Things? Yeah. Anything that distributes power throughout, whether it's a panel or it basically something that distributes power that you can put like receptacles into is like kind of my thought. And in my mind, it's usually hardwired because most panels, like you can do plug and play, but it's very rare that the building can handle the circuitry of that. But yes, so panel, beam, table, like benching tables that distribute power.
Yeah.
Awesome. Something else I think is kind of interesting about when you're defining these things, because I have actually heard about this incident that happened between a developer and one of our manufacturers. Actually, they argued for an hour and a half over whether or not this thing that you put your feet on was a poof or not a poof.
I brought that up when they were talking about because that was another thing that we were gonna talk about with the lingo explained, is that it's very unfair of us as designers to complain about the way that things are categorized within like an extension, because poof, and the poof is what I used is that from this manufacturer, a poof is a small round thing on the ground. From other ones, that's an ottoman. Within the same manufacturer, you can have a poof and an ottoman, and they're basically the same thing. So
marketing person just died.
I know. I mean, but when you get down to like the actual core of it, they have the same definition. It's just it's unfair to judge on the dev side because they don't know what a poof is. Like, I have some salespeople that literally sell furniture and would call it an ottoman, even if it's called a poof. I mean, but and to that point too, like when you get into like seating and side seating and guest seating and cafe seating, you could have the same chair in each one of those categories, and it almost makes it more difficult when you break them up like that, like forced to categorize them, because someone's always going to have a complaint about it. Like, there is one manufacturer that has what I would call like a guest chair or a side chair, but they have it on a 5-star caster base, and then they're calling it a task chair. No one in their right mind would ever sit in that as a task chair, but you know, it's just trying to find all those things under those categories. In reality, nobody's right and nobody's wrong.
It's funny because as a scientist, like by nature, like everything to me is like categorized and easily referenced sort of thing, because we come up with the terms and we just apply them as we need to. Like Pluto not being a planet anymore is basically a an artifact of
an outrage. An outrage.
Okay. Another nerd alert topic. Why I'm fine with Pluto not being a planet anymore. Actually, that's a great one.
You are no longer a co-host of this podcast.
No, I'm actually here for that content. Like,
maybe the nerd alert is actually an argument. We have a 4-minute one, 2 minutes of me saying why Pluto shouldn't be a planet anymore, and 2 minutes of Audrey saying why.
And then do I get to decide?
I can tell you in like 5 seconds. Ooh, there we go. I mean, my argument is simple: nostalgia and respect.
Science doesn't give a crap about respect or nostalgia. It's what's right and what's wrong. It's what's true and what's not.
Why do they have, okay, anyways. Move on. What's the next lingo?
Building envelope is one that I actually discovered recently. And I was kind of curious if that's one you actually hear ever or...
That might be more architectural term. But I will say that...
That's what I was thinking.
That when I moved from my small dealership to working at Price Modern, I realize I never said that I worked for Price Modern, but working at a large dealership out of like working with DC and Baltimore and like big government clients and big architecture firms, I have actually learned a lot more, like expanded my knowledge of terms that people use because there's like perfect example. I don't know what a building envelope is. So if anyone wants to write in and answer that one for us. But one of the ones I did actually have on my list that I learned about coming to work at Price Modern is a SCIF, which is a sensitive compartmented information facility. What does that mean?
Ooh.
And this is actually helpful. This might be helpful for devs too, for us understanding why we ask certain questions or like ask for certain features. So with a SCIF, it's a secure environment. Think of government where, you know, key card access, like for us, like some of them, we have to get clearance to even go in there. But the main SCIFs that I've worked on is that within the panel, you have a classified data line and an unclassified data line. So like think the president that's got like 2 phones on each side of the desk. That's because each of those phones can't be within 3 feet of each other because this data line can steal information from this data line if they get too close. So in the panels, we segment them and run like either one of the lines at the bottom and then one of the lines at the top. So we need data exit points up higher where a lot of systems don't have them at that location. So it's a lot of like fussing with getting these 2 data lines far enough apart so we don't break national security or something. But that was, that was a new one for me. And it's not easy to plan with. I've gotten much better at it after having so many of them, but, that was a new one for me coming to this job. So
no, that's really fascinating to me because this is one of the things I think people don't really respect about the interior design industry outside of it is like, you know, even coming into it, I have to admit, like, kind of like, oh, it's just, you know, picking chairs.
Pillows.
How hard is that? Kind of thing. Yeah, it's pillows and chairs. And then it's like, oh, no, I have to keep these data lines 3 feet apart at all times. Otherwise, like, you know, some Russian spy can steal the government's information or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely insane. Like, wow. Oh,
good thing the desk in the Oval Office is like 10 feet long.
Mm-hmm. I have 2 ways to poorly describe my job. Is the first one is I make sure that nobody dies in a fire because that's like the number one thing. Got to make sure everybody can get out of the building if there's a fire. And then I'm a professional chair picker. I mean, that's, those are my 2.
I love it.
I have it on a t-shirt. I sell it in my Etsy shop.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. That's so funny.
I think somebody actually was wearing your t-shirt at VCon that I saw.
Oh, awesome. I saw a couple of people at the conference and I was like, yes.
What's the name of your Etsy shop? I don't know if we're allowed to plug it, but we're going to do it anyway.
So it's Dealer Designed. And it is strictly for interior designers. I have no different market flows. I've literally created it so that people like me could get merch. Like,
I love that.
So I make stickers. Stickers are my biggest seller because they're cheap. I can make them cheap so people can actually afford them. But got lots of stuff.
I love it. That's awesome.
Nerd alert!
Welcome to to Nerd Alert. Today's topic is going to be, how should I word this? Why Adam's wrong about Pluto.
As in why Pluto is no longer a planet.
Allegedly.
No, it isn't.
There's another one that's going to be really hard for me emotionally. But we're going to do it. So,
yeah.
Are you ready, Adam?
I am ready.
3, 2, 1.
So Pluto is no longer a planet because Pluto should have never been a planet in the first place. Everything about Pluto doesn't really fit with planetary mechanics. So let's start with its size. Pluto and Pluto's moon are almost the same size. So why does Pluto get to be a planet and not Charon? That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Why is that the case? That seems kind of insane. So that's reason number one. Reason number two is actually the orbital plane problem, which is that if you were to take out a level and have like a flat plane that all the planets in our solar system sat on, you'd actually find a discrepancy of no more than 15 degrees for the entire thing. Except for our boy Pluto, who's like 30 or 45. So like Pluto's planetary plane is completely out of alignment with all the others, which is also like, that's kind of weird. And then of course there's everyone's favorite fact, which I think this one's pretty funny because there's some pretty good jokes about it, but Pluto's overall size is actually way too small to be a planet. It was, when it was considered a planet, easily the tiniest one in the solar system. But it's kind of silly because there are comets that are bigger than Pluto. So why are we doing that? I can see Audrey rolling her eyes as I'm talking here. So Pluto is no longer a planet. It never really should have been in the first place. If you even look at like an old map of like the orbits of like the planets and stuff, you can actually see how out of whack Pluto's orbit is. It's absolutely insane. It's very clear it was a little bit different than the others. I've actually heard an argument that I think is interesting, which is like, well, can't it just be an honorary planet then? Can't we just give it that distinction because that's the way that it is? And as I was telling Audrey earlier today, science doesn't care about your nostalgia. Science doesn't care about like these like emotional sort of ideas. Science cares about what's true and not true. And Pluto is at best a minor planet. So I guess it kind of is a planet. It's just a minor planet.
Oh, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
So that's Pluto.
Amazing. Wow. Well, I just feel like science seems to really be all head and no heart.
Yeah, that's kind of the point.
I'm disappointed in science.
I do have a question for you though, Audrey.
Yes.
Did you hear about Pluto?
That's messed up. If you know what that reference is from, please email in at snapintoit@configure.com.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from you and how much you love pineapples.
Yeah, for sure.
So as a physicist, this one drove me crazy when I first got into the industry, and I don't know how much you can really talk about this, but color temperature absolutely drives me nuts.
But I guess it's in, because it's in Kelvin. Know, like,
yes! It's like, oh my gosh, you are killing me. That is not how that
my
works.
My husband is also a physicist, and it also drives him crazy. I had to explain to him, he was picking out light bulbs for our house, and he's like, this is all BS. None of this makes any sense. What were you interior designers thinking? And I'm like, it doesn't. I remember when I learned it in school, it doesn't make sense, but it's showing how cold, like cool or how warm a light bulb is basically. So it's dumb. It doesn't make sense.
What does cool and warm mean?
So in CET, where you have like the light settings, or we used to have the cool light settings, it would have like numbers from like 3000 to 7000, which, and they're in, much to Adam's dismay, it means Kelvin. So like 3000 Kelvin is very warm, like a really warm, sunny type light, where like 7000 Kelvin is like really bright blue daylight. So, and like right in the middle is like pure white light. So think of like your really aggressive LEDs. So you're correct. It doesn't make any sense. And the only reason that we know it is because we literally went to school and I still have to check it every time, or just like play with the slidey bar until it goes to the color I want. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One of the things I think is interesting to bring up for those who are maybe in the interior design industry is that Kelvin is actually a scientific unit we use to describe temperature. It's the only one I know of that doesn't involve the word degree. So you don't call things degrees Kelvin. You just call it Kelvin. And it's typically starting where it's the same as Celsius, except zero is absolute zero, the coldest possible temperature. And then it goes up from there, essentially. And usually we use it for stellar stuff when we're talking about stars and things like that. And if we're talking about things in the real world, we just use Celsius typically in science. So
what you're saying is it's not like Celsius.
So the numbers actually go up by the same, an increase of 1 Kelvin is the same as 1 degree Celsius. That's what I mean when I say they're the same. It's the same difference between those two.
It's not like Fahrenheit where freezing and boiling are random numbers. Yeah. I learned a lot about Celsius when I went to Iceland because my Canadian friends be like, oh, it's 14 out. I was like, what does that mean? So,
Cindy, did you have any you wanted to bring up to us?
Just not necessarily specific lingo, but kind of explaining, because when we had talked before, talking about floor cores and
I wanted to hear about this
and that devs don't understand what that means. In fairness, there's 10 different types of floor cores. So, and when designers use the term floor core, I was literally just on a call with the electrical team for this project yesterday, and they used 4 different terms for a floor core. So there's a floor core, there's a poke through, there's a semi-recessed box. It's basically, in the terms that we use it, is that it's a hole in the floor that we're going to get power from. and that can vary in size, it can have power, it can have data, it can have all sorts of different things. It can have an actual monument, which is a flip top unit in the floor. Think old convention centers that have the little flipped up things that you can plug into. Some are hardwired, some are not. But I will say that they are difficult to plan with in CET. I have found some hacks and cheats to make it work, but most people I know still prefer to do all their power in CAD because it's kind of a pain in the butt, especially because it all overlaps in weird fashion. And we want to be able to turn it off all the time, and we can't because we don't have layers in CET. Well, not like CAD, but there's ways around it. But still, there's a lot about floor cores. There's a lot about power. I think that's the most complex thing.
And it's actually one of the more complex things to program, too. Yeah. It's really hard for us to get that right.
And that leads directly into, because we were talking about breaking down a feature request.
Yeah.
So, I think this one's actually for users and devs. But so my favorite feature request, and I ask for it every single year, every panel that I sit on, it says, I want to be able to show power. And I submitted that every single year. I want to be able to show power better. I want to be able to route wires. And the problem was that I was wording that wrong. The first time that I said that, all the devs looked at Eric Hinkle and he goes, power hard. I was like, okay, fair. And what the devs interpreted as was that I wanted to be able to show how the power exits. Cause for most of the systems, the power will light up green or it'll show you the points that it's entering or exiting the system. So it's easy to tell where your power is routing. What I really should have said was that I want to be able to show where cords go. So where those data lines for the SCIFs we were talking about, I need a way to visually show that. It's a nightmare. The one person that I found is she's a girl on my team, and she had to bring in CIL panels, explode them, take one tile off, create a custom shape, color the custom shape, route it through, make another custom shape. And it took her forever. It looked exactly what I wanted it to look like. But I was describing it wrong to the devs. And really at the end of the day is all I want is a like a 3D polyline that I can put color to. And that's it. And, and they were like, well, that's really simple. And I'm like, okay, so I'm the problem. Like, I'm just asking you.
Okay, Taylor.
It's me. But I think that that's important is to, like, after talking and getting to know more devs and, like, understanding, like, their lingo about things is, like, explain what the end goal is. Like, I want to be able to show a wire from my power module plugging into my panel or routing a wire underneath a training table and coming out the bottom. You know, like, so those, because those visuals are so critical to clients and so critical to our installs and how we plan for things. And it's a lot of guesswork and it's a lot of math, which not good at. Because those cords only are a certain distance and you have to get to this plug. Mm-hmm. And when the table's all the way up here. Yeah. So that was my lesson learned on explaining what the actual goal is versus saying, I want to show power. Well, okay. I realize how dumb it is now, but yeah.
Yeah. Like, what does power mean in this
case? What does power mean to you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
You could ask that survey question and get 1,000 different answers from designers.
Ooh, there we go. That's good. I like it.
Yeah.
Just for fun. Yeah.
I also think it's interesting you're highlighting that communication piece because I think I often take it for granted that I do an okay job, like being able to communicate. I find like with both groups. But like, yeah, absolutely. There's tons of times when like a user will say something and I'm like, oh, okay. Gotcha. 100%. That's the thing you're looking for. And then I give them something. And they're like,
no,
what is this trash? Yeah. What is this thing you just gave me? This is not what I asked for at all. It's not even in the same world.
Well, and I do want to point out to the, users is that some of the reason that this, like our feature request takes so long is that the devs are really committed to doing it the best way possible, like taking that and making it as functional as they can for the user community. And they're really trying to go above and beyond. I've talked to a couple devs at Hayworth, some at Kimball, and been like, this is what you need to do. And they're like, oh, but we could do this with it. And I love that because a lot of the time they hear what we're asking and they want to go the extra mile to begin with. And it's the same thing. It's like, yes, that's an amazing tool, super helpful. But what I really need is just this. Like, there's this little, I just need this little piece. If you want to keep working on that all the way, like, we would love it. But if you're going to spin your wheels on it to make it perfect, like, we understand that we'll start with the baby stuff if you want to work up to the big stuff, you know?
Yeah. No, I think that's a great point. We see that happen all the time where like, you know, we get, I don't know how to describe this other than I'm going to call it nerd snipes, which is something we used to call it back when I was a physics guy, which is basically just like obsessive about a problem almost where it's like this thing, I could do this and I could do that. And like, it's also fun for us to be able to do super cool things. So like, there's also that propensity to push in that direction as well. But yeah, I think sometimes you can lose the sight of like the end goal or the end timeline when you get that feature creep, when you get that sort of like, oh, I can make it do this and I can make it do that. And then sometimes you end up with something that's something no one can use because it was like super cool to start with and you just kept monkeying with it, you know?
And I mean, that happens to all of us. When you get excited about something.
Oh, absolutely. Super easy to do. I just wanted to add something about floor cores too, because you know, I've known what they were for, you know, not ever, but you know, a long time. But when I was doing the dealer visits last year, I think what struck me is how important they are. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not just that it's, you know, this is a thing that they are, but it's like, it takes time. It's really important to get right. And it is really tedious in CET because I would see people placing the floor core and then adding dimensions to each wall in the room, you know? And then the other thing that was interesting is that it sounds like some installers, like you can just be like, okay, this is kind of around where I want it, but like drill it based on like the actual architecture, like don't go into, what's the word I'm looking for?
Like rebar?
Beams?
The rebar?
or
yeah,
like structural stuff. They're fine with a little bit more general, like get it around here. Whereas others are like, oh, you told me to do it exactly in this spot, so I'm going to do that. But whoops, I accidentally bumped into whatever. So like being able to visualize it and make sure it's accurate and clear what you want. Like it's really time consuming. And so I think it's really important. But then another thing about floor cores, I was just on a visit last week and I saw something that I haven't seen before, but I thought was super cool, was that somebody put a 3D custom circle over their floor core that made it really tall so that they could visualize in the 3D where the floor core was.
Oh, I like
that. And I was like, that's genius. So I just had to include that here as a tip in case anybody else wants to use that. I was blown away. I mean, it's so simple, but it's like, oh my gosh. Yeah, that's great.
And to that point with floor cores, when we're dimensioning them, there may be walls that aren't actually built in real life when those need to be drilled. So depending on who it is, like who the contractor is, they might want it from the center line of a column or from the building exterior or from the, like the new built walls. And if you get one of those floor cores wrong, it's so expensive. It's like up to $3,000 just to bring the machine out. Like even if you have just one to do, or excuse me, like $5,000 just to bring the machine out to fix one. And then for each additional one, it's a nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to get it right the first time.
Oh, you have to.
Get it right the next time. That's not the same thing.
The only other thing that I had on my list that I think is, and maybe Adam, you can help with this, because the difference between what users say and devs say when they, or what they mean when they say these words. And we actually have multiple definitions for some of them. So the word extension, the word tag, yes. The word catalog, and the word library. Those were like the four that I'm like, we all mean something different when we're saying those. And I think it's important for both sides to understand what we're trying to say. Because for me, when I'm saying tag, I'm talking tag 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's going to transfer.
Yeah, like part tagging.
Part tagging that comes from my drawing that's going to go to my CIF, my PMX. Well, some people, when they say tag, they mean part number.
Yeah, IND tag.
Yep. Or IND tag's actually different. Tag can mean tag, part number, or IND tag.
Oh, I didn't realize that. That's new to me.
Because some people use IND tags where they manually type their part numbers out, and then some of them actually use that for like sorting their product. We had a very long tag conversation at the extension alignment board and we all disagreed. we were all wrong.
I'm definitely going to go over some of this stuff in my session at Experience. I'm actually doing Nerd Alert Live, but I will talk about some of these for sure. I think that extension is a hard one to get into in the time that we have left here. But what I can say is that extension to literally everybody means something completely different depending on what context you're using it. So like the actual definition of extension, I would say, is a pile of code, essentially, that is outside of the base code of CET. That's what I think of as an extension. But then like, what does that actually mean? There's like a file called a CMEXT. That is actually what gets installed on your computer. There is like the idea of an extension, like Hayworth, I'm going to pick on for a second. Hayworth has a bunch of sub extensions inside of it. So a lot of people refer to that entire pile as a single extension, even though it's about 20 or 30, I think. So that one's a real pain in the butt, but tags is a fun one. The biggest reason that there's a discrepancy with tags, and it actually goes down to the tags view mode, is because in developer land, that the thing that is a tag is just called, I'm trying to remember if it's actually called, I think it's called item tag, is actually the thing that actually pops up next to like, you know, this is this part number for this one. And then you have the part tag as well. And it feels weird because part tag and item tag are kind of confusing terms, because part tag has nothing to do with the part necessarily. And item tag doesn't really have anything, or is the thing that has something to do with that part. So it feels really weird, I think, as a developer. And then we spend a lot of time obsessing about, the part numbers and getting those accurate and stuff mm-hmm. when you're developing an extension. So we obsess about item tags. Part tagging from a developer perspective is kind of handled by someone else. We don't really have to do a lot of work to make that happen. Basically, CET Core is taking care of that for you. So when we hear people obsessing about tags, we're like, oh, okay, they must mean item tags because that's the only thing I think of. So why would they worry about anything else?
Yeah.
And then the tag view mode ends up having those item tags show up in it, which is not, mm-hmm. as I understand it, for and Audrey, this is where you get to correct me if I'm wrong, but as I understand it, that is not the intention of the tag view mode.
No, that is meant to be part tags, mm-hmm. but because it's just called tags, people think it's whatever they think tags are. And I have wanted for years for them to just call it part tags, the view mode, mm-hmm. because
that's what it is.
It's so painful. Yeah. Because then if users think it's item tags too, then they are like, why don't some extensions have it? They are broken mm-hmm. when really they're not actually. They're doing it right.
And too, with that, some manufacturers, when they say tag, it means part number, and they might mm-hmm. expect like a view all to see all the part numbers or to see whatever. So there's no right answer. Everybody's right. Everybody's wrong.
Yes, there is. No, I'm just kidding.
I mean, I think I'm right,
just
but.
Just kidding. No, I'm right.
Yeah, that's right.
Fine.
Kidding, that's an expert from the Extension Alignment Board.
Oh my gosh, we do
get a lot of stuff done. It's good to hear everybody's opinion. Yeah. I'm not trying to talk down on it. It's wonderful that it exists and we all get our opinions out there so that there's not some overlord saying this is what a tag is. It's taking everybody's opinion into account and how it affects their business systems, how it affects their drawings. So it's a great thing. It's a good thing. It's a good discussion.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's actually important mm-hmm. / essential for there to be those conflicting views because like there's a bias mm-hmm. called false consensus bias. And it's where, it can be either someone thinking this way about themselves, or if you're like researching and you listen to a person talking, mm-hmm. you kind of think, oh, well, they feel really strongly about this. So everybody must feel this way mm-hmm. or, on the flip side, as somebody who's like, if you're the person sharing your opinion, you can present it as this is how everybody feels. Cause I have two or three of my own colleagues, mm-hmm. Who agree with me. So the entire 20,000, others in the user base also agree with me. Mm-hmm. So it's really important to have those differing views, so that we don't get trapped in that of like, okay, there are different mm-hmm. ways people use this. How do we approach it so that all these different perspectives can be mm-hmm. Solved for whatever they want. So.
Absolutely.
The last one I'll talk about real quick is actually something I did cover earlier on in the first Nerd Alert, which is like the idea of what a snapper is. Mm-hmm. Is complicated, but like the closest equivalent to the end user is simple. And that's a good one for everybody to be reminded of because I feel like that's the number one thing that gets weird. Because in the CM language, the language that CET is written in, there actually is a term called symbol. It's so abstract. It has nothing to do with anything that I can really easily define for you, but it's just basically something that comes up every once in a while. So when you say symbol to a dev, there's an odd chance that they're going to be very confused by that conversation mm-hmm. because it's like, how does that anything in a user would ever interact with? How do you even know that exists? Kind of thing.
Wait, what are we supposed to call them?
So snappers.
No, you're not supposed to call them anything. It's just what developers call
interesting.
Them.
Interesting.
Yeah, so developers call them snappers. Yeah.
Interesting. Because would have never, ever used. The only time I use that term is when I'm talking about the little yellow. That's a snapper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I actually talked about this too, but I'll quick go over it again because I think it's worth you knowing at least about Sydney. With the little yellow nose, those are technically called connectors, and the things that jump to those connectors or snap to them are called snappers. And there's actually controversy in the developer world on this topic on which one should be called which. I'm actually team snapper, and I'm one of the few people I know that is team snapper. Everybody else that I know is basically like, they should be called connectors. They connect to things. It does not make sense. It is the thing doing the connecting. The little yellow nodes are technically called connectors. And then the snappers are the big things that jump to those yellow nodes. So
the symbols, as we would call them.
symbols. Yep, mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, that, yeah. Okay, I think that's the craziest miscommunication that we've talked about yet, because...
yeah, it's bad one. It happens a lot.
Yeah, that's a big one.
It's bad.
Wow.
It's infuriating to sit back and watch.
But now we know. Now we know.
Now you know.
Now we know.
Sydney, if you could have anybody on the podcast, who would you have? Anybody in the world can be realistic, can be completely unrealistic.
Living or dead.
Wait, like anybody or somebody that I think anybody. that would be helpful to the podcast?
You could say both.
Oh, I don't know. You can't put me on the spot there. I was going to go industry and say Michael Beale because he's, obviously extremely knowledgeable, but also very entertaining. So I think that'd be good for both.
He might also be the nicest human being ever. I've never met a kinder soul in my life.
Without question, the kindest human.
Yeah. There's no competition.
No, absolutely none.
No.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's a good one.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually recorded a little tiny bit with him at NeoCon because I was just kind of trying to get clips, and I'm not even sure if we'll use all the ones that we got, but I for sure want to have him on like a full session because he's just a delight.
An absolute delight.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for joining us, Sydney.
Yeah.
Good job, Sydney.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been fun.
Yeah. Good job, Adam.
Good job, Audrey.
Good job, everyone. Go team.
All right. Yay, go team. We did it.
I love it.
Perfect. Amazing. Well, thank you, and we will talk later.
Thanks, guys.
Bye. Bye.